Then he said to them, Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts always be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our redeemer. Amen. Our relationship to pictures is a complicated one, and it's actually even more complicated all the time now because we can take pictures no matter where we are and whenever we want. In fact, people take pictures when they see somebody on the street that they know or somebody who's famous, and they post them out there so that people can look at them and they can share with the world all the things that are meaningful about them because they have a picture of it. And pictures, therefore, carry a lot more meaning than we often think that they do. In fact, if you had met me for the first time or if I was traveling on a trip and I met somebody and was having a conversation, they don't know me from anybody else in the world, and I'm having a conversation with them, and they say, well, what's your family like? I would say, well, I've got a wife, and I've got four kids, and they might say, well, yeah, I can, that seems reasonable. But if I show them photos then of folks, it makes it more real. It's not just that I said I had four kids, I can now scroll through my phone with the many photos I've taken, which actually is not true. I never take pictures on my phone. So I just, but we'll just pretend this morning that I do such a thing. In fact, I'd never take pictures hardly anywhere because my other job, I take pictures all the time. So I don't want to do it in my leisure time. But if I show them four photos, that makes those four children of mine more real. It's actually as if something is behind the statement that I have four kids. And when we look at images, too, it's not just that they make that person real. They don't just make them real because of the likeness of them. They make them real because we start to think about them in different ways. In fact, I'm sure you've had an experience like this where you've seen the photo of a person, you've thought, that looks like a nice person. Or that looks like a mean person. Or that looks like somebody who's going to cause trouble. And in fact, we start to give attributes to people just by the way they look that we could never know. And I'm sure everybody in here at some point has seen the picture of a person and thought, that's a stupid person. You've never seen them. All you've done, you've never met them. You've just seen a photo. Or you've given the attribute of intelligence. So that's why I grew this beard, because it was I needed some more gravitas. So we start to give more depth, meaning, because we've seen something, then we have just heard about it in lots of ways. And then there's another way that photos and pictures that we have in our lives play a role, and that is the proximity they have to us. A photo that you would see in an office of somebody, or if you walk into a home and see a picture on the wall, you assume there is some kind of relationship that prompted that person to want to display in a prominent area a photo of something that was meaningful and someone who was meaningful to them. In fact, if you had pictures up on your wall of just random folks, people would think it was weird. And I can attest to this because I recently moved into an office in the university, and when I got there, I found out that this office I was moving into had been a storage room for folks who had moved offices before, and in that process, they had packed up boxes that for some reason had not gone to their new office. And so I got in there, and I was like, I'm going to decorate my office with everything that was left behind. And so I have just the most bizarre artwork on the wall, but I do now have on my desk the picture of a four-year-old little girl covered in chocolate cake from what was obviously her birthday, but it's not my four-year-old little girl. So somebody was in there asking me about it, and I said, well, I don't know who it is. And they said, well, I do know, actually know who it is, because I discovered who it is, and it's a work colleague. And so now I get to use all the powers of my seminary-trained priestly guilt to tell him that he left his child behind. So, but I got this photo in there, and I told this to somebody, and they said, you're a liar for putting that photo out. I'm not a liar. It's just a picture, isn't it? It's just a picture, but it's not just a picture. The images that we have in our lives, they communicate so much more about who we are and the relationships we're in and what we aspire to. I had this experience growing up with a family that was from Georgia. In every house that you would go to in Georgia in the 1980s, it didn't matter what their political affiliation was. They would have pictures of grandma and aunts and uncles and their kids on the wall. And right in the midst of all that, you would see a framed photo of Jimmy Carter, because he was something that was meaningful to their identity as a Georgian. And then I lived in Massachusetts for several years. And if you go into any Irish Catholic family in the greater Boston metro area, you will go and there'll be three photos on the wall. There will be Jesus, Mary, the mother of Jesus, and then St. John F. Kennedy next to them. So there are lots of ways that the photos then drive us to certain ideals and attributes. They provide something for us to gaze upon to become more like something else. Pictures have meaning because they make things real, because they bring things closer, and in some ways, they tell us more about something than what we knew just by hearing about them. And if the Pharisees and the Herodians had remembered this about pictures this morning, they wouldn't have gotten chastised by Jesus. Because when they show up, they've totally forgotten that images are meaningful. In fact, they've forgotten it because they become so obsessed with finding a way to indict Jesus. And they're actually building a case against him. This story today takes place, as Matthew puts it, in the very last week of Jesus' life, within 2 or 3 days of him being arrested and crucified. And you can see that they show up to entrap him. It's like a scene from some spy or cop show that you've seen. It's almost like they put a wire on somebody to go in and find out what Jesus has done wrong so they can present it in court later on. And they ask a question that they feel as though there is no good way for Jesus to answer, that they cannot use it in testimony against him. And what Jesus does, though it seems on the surface to be clever, is actually much more damning. So they bring and they ask him about taxes, of course, a topic that is a no-win situation. I will never preach on taxes in this place because I like having a job, and I don't know how I could preach on it that we wouldn't have strife afterwards. They ask him a question about taxes to entrap him to make a court case. And Jesus then says, well, let me see a coin. And somebody actually has one, which is their first mistake. Because unless you've been paying attention for several weeks in the lectionary, all of these stories that we've been hearing from Matthew have a location. Though they don't remind us each week where that location is. When they ask Jesus this question about taxes, they ask him it in the temple. And they are not allowed to have Roman money in the temple. And the reason is, as Jesus points out to them, it has a likeness on it. In fact, this is one of the commandments we heard several weeks ago. You're not allowed to make likenesses. And in the first century in that temple, you could have the likeness of nothing in it. But somebody who has come to entrap Jesus is breaking that one rule. He's got a likeness, and it's on money. And as we said, likenesses stand for all kinds of other things, even when they're on money, or especially when they're on money. Now, he has proven that these folks who are legalists and followers of the law are actually breaking the law. We know that they're not allowed to have this money in because we have this other story where Jesus cleans out the money changers. That's because people sat at the door of the temple and said, you give me your money with a likeness on it, and I will give you some money you can use inside that has no likeness on it. That is what they've been doing. So now they're caught. They actually are breaking one of the Ten Commandments. And then Jesus, if he has not trapped them enough with that, now tells them, if that likeness is on that thing, that belongs to that person. And their response is, they're amazed. Not because Jesus is clever, not because he has outmaneuvered or outsmarted them, but because he has reminded them of a deep theological truth by telling them and reminding them of the prohibition against images in the temple. The prohibition against images, they're in the Ten Commandments. Why is it that God doesn't want images to be made? Is God against art? Does God not want people to use their imaginations? But it is not that at all. In fact, we know from last week's story, God doesn't want images made of other gods, but God doesn't want images made of God's self as well. And that is because God, the artist, already made the perfect likeness of himself when he made the human race. In Genesis 1, the word that is used, that you are made in the image of God, literally is the same word that is used for idol. That what happens when God makes the human race is he makes the idol of himself. He makes the idol because he knows that images are powerful. And he wants folks, when they see that image, to know who it belongs to and what it represents and the character that is behind it and the relationship there is with it. And he wants each one of us to realize that when we look at one another, we are actually looking at the likeness, the icon of God. And that God reveals God's self most fully in the idol that God has already made in you, in me. And now, if you want to give Caesar that thing that has Caesar's likeness on it, that is a pittance of a little piece of metal, you better remember that you also owe God the things that have God's image on it as well. And that is you. And that is me. Because Caesar can have whatever little stuff Caesar wants. Because God has everything else. And God did that by forming small little icons of God's self in the people that he made when he made them male and female in the idol, the image, the icon of God. So go ahead, worry and gnash your teeth about what belongs to who, but you belong to God. And if you want to give Caesar whatever you want to give Caesar, go for it. But remember, you owe everything and reveal everything about God to this world through the idol that you already are, the image that has been imprinted and the inscription that is on you in your heart as belonging to God. Amen.